Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy for episode 102 for May 12, 2011, Sirens of Chrome. Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. Well, thanks for joining us again here, folks, for Autoline After Hours. And joining me, as always, is the auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo. Peter.
John, how are you?
I'm doing great. And as you know,
we're in a different world.
We're in a different world tonight. You know, we got to describe it for those on the podcast, but we're going to have a fashion show here of sorts tonight because we've got Marjorie Krebsky, who's written a book called Sirens of Chrome. I know a lot of you are watching or listening tonight because we're going to be giving away a book to a winner. In fact, Marjorie brought some extra books. We'll be giving away a few more too. We're going to announce that at the end of the show. And, she, of course, is someone who's been involved with product experts or models at auto shows, and we'll be taking a look at some 40 years of vintage outfits that models have worn at auto shows, and she'll be telling us all about that. So that'll be fun. We'll get into that in a little bit. But a lot of news, as always, this week, too. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Peter, was Bob Stempel passed away. You know, he's a guy that I knew from the very beginning of my career. When I first met Bob Stempel, he was chief engineer at Chevrolet and rose up on through the ranks to become CEO and chairman. And then he only lasted like 2 years, and they threw him out on his ear.
Yeah.
I always thought it was pretty bad the way they treated him.
Yeah, I did, too. And my first real media conference was Bob. I think he was the chief engineer of Chevrolet, and he got up there with no notes, nothing, and was just, like, mesmerizing. And this is a guy who is an engineer's engineer. I mean, he was involved in the 67 Tornado, engineering that whole front-wheel drive thing.
Right.
And I always liked Bob, and he was a genuine car guy. And I had the opportunity to get to know Bob's daughter, Barb, at Campbell Ewald. So I got to know a little bit more about him through her.
Hmm.
And, yeah, it was sad because he's a good guy. He was a good guy and extremely talented, and he got the shaft bad when he was running GM. What was it? He told the media he had one good day, and then they invaded.
Yeah. Well, you know, the U.S. went to war against Iraq, Saddam Hussein, and, you know, We you know, the whole economy dropped into a recession, and that's why he said he had one good day, because they named him chairman, and the next day we went to war.
Yeah,
and,
it's just like, really?
But he was trying to slash costs and everything like that, and yada-da, and then they got totally impatient, and, you know, the word was that, well, he's an engineer. He was not a finance guy, didn't come out of the New York treasurer's office, which, as you know, just about up until recently, every single chairman has come out of.
Which I vehemently disagreed with.
Yeah.
And I thought it led GM down the wrong path for a long time.
Right.
Because it was always automatic. Well, the chairman has to be a finance guy, and the president can be an engineer, but the engineer will never be, you know,
the
chairman.
CEO. Right.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, what did she say to me? You never see finance guys trying to be, you know, engineers or whatever, product people, but.
Well, you know, one interesting Stempel story that I really remember is he played the key role in figuring out how to mass productionize the catalytic converter. GM did not invent the catalytic converter. In fact, the first references I ever saw to a catalytic converter go back to 1958. And that's what I know. I'm sure historians can even find it going back farther than that. But Stempel was the guy who figured out how to engineer it across the line, mass production.
Yeah, Ed Cole gave the order, though,
right,
that this is what we're doing.
Right.
So we're all going to get on board here.
But I asked Stempel, I said, yeah, well, you know, big deal. Honda's got this engine, the CVCC, that doesn't need a catalytic converter. This was probably 1978 when I was talking to Stempel about it. And he goes, John, it doesn't matter. It's a dead end. It's a technological dead end. And I go, what are you talking about? He says,
Actually, it must have been earlier than that because unleaded fuel came in 73, right?
I think it was later than that. I think unleaded
catalytic converters came on in 73.
Maybe the very first ones. They didn't really get going until the mid-70s and later.
Okay.
And but anyway, it was 78 or 79, and what he told me is the CVCC was a technological dead end because he said, first of all, it'll only work in a small four-cylinder engine, and at that time, GM didn't do a whole lot of that. But secondly, he said, emission standards go up to a point as such that by the end of 1980, no one, not even Honda, can meet those standards
without
a catalytic converter. So we're not even going to go down the CVCC path because it's a technological dead end.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. And so every time anybody says that to me, well, Honda came up with one that didn't need it, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, for 5 minutes.
Right.
But the interesting thing about Bob is, you know, when he was summarily dismissed from GM, you know, he didn't lay around. He ended up with Ovonic and Energy Conversion Devices and
right.
was quite, you know, a lead player in the development and, you know, battery development and all these things. So, you know, he was an engineer to the end. So.
Yeah, he really was. And that's my one regret that we didn't get him on this show, you know, because Chip and I had talked about it and just didn't get around to it in time.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It is. Hey, we got to talk about your column this week, too, in Auto Extremist. You warned the auto industry, beware of China. Beware of these. In fact, let me read what you've got here, because what you're talking about is how the Chinese are saying if you want to sell electric cars in China, not only do you have to build them in China, you have to do it with a Chinese partner, and that partner is going to have dominance over one of the three key components in an electric car, either the battery, the motor, the electric motor, or the power electronics. And I want to read what you put in your column here. This is akin to putting a gun to the head of these manufacturers and saying, you're either going to hand over your intellectual property and other good stuff, and you're going to like it so that you can get a cut of the profits, or else you're not going to do business here. And then you go on to say, let's just call it what it is, economic diplomacy by gunpoint.
Well, yeah, and here's a case where they will not allow the Chevy Volt. GM wants to sell the Chevy Volt in China, obviously. They will not allow the Chevy Volt to get the full incentives because and you know, as we discussed, the Volt is one of the most impressive technical achievements in modern automotive history, and GM isn't just going to hand over, oh, yeah, this is what we do. Go ahead, copy it. So, you know, there's a lot of ramifications there. Obviously, the manufacturers are looking at the Chinese market and say, boy, there is so much money there. I mean, we're seeing all the numbers Audi's generating. I mean, it's China and Volkswagen Group spending all that money, and they're saying, we're going to go big in China. But, you know, there's going to be a downside. And as long as if they start doing what they've been doing in other industries, they eventually crib all the technology and an intellectual property, and when they get to a point where they got it, they say, see ya.
Right.
And all these manufacturers say, well, that's not going to happen. Well, I actually believe it will happen, but you make a real good point earlier, and that is this red-hot China thing. Can't stay red hot forever, and they have a huge raft of issues and problems, societal issues that they have to deal with. One of which is they're all big on electric vehicles, but the only way they can generate electricity is by coal plants, and they have the worst air pollution in the world. And, you know, that's not going to work.
I completely agree with that.
And you made an interesting comment about the size of the market. Why don't you?
Yeah, well, you know, even, well, there's two things about the size of the market that I find interesting. If you measure the way that we measure car sales, pass cars and light trucks, the U.S. market, even right now today, is actually bigger than China's. Not by much, and they will surpass us, because with four times the population, the writing's on the wall. But I just want to put things in perspective and say, yeah, if you want to throw off-road equipment and buses and ag equipment and everything.
Those little bicycles with the little engines on them.
So, yeah, if you want to throw all that stuff in, no question, China makes more vehicles. But if you count vehicles the way we count vehicles, then the U.S. still has a slight lead. But even more importantly, to me, it was real interesting to go into GM's numbers because they break them out by region. And if you look at what GM calls its international operations, this does not include Europe, does not include South America. It's pretty much just Asia and Australia. They sell a million more vehicles a year than what GM North America sold last year. A million more vehicles. And yet GM North America, which still isn't totally back on its feet yet,
still
made
more
than twice as much profit. And so I find that very interesting because you don't see any of the European or Japanese companies or even the Koreans breaking out what their profit is in China. Mm-hmm. And that's because there isn't a whole lot to brag about there. That will change,
yeah.
But it's the U.S. market is still more than twice as profitable as the Chinese market. But, you know, what's going on in China right now reminds me of Toyota 3 years ago. Everyone said, oh, my gosh, Toyota's invincible. It's the best. There's no stopping it. And, boy, did that change. And there's just something that gut feel that tells me we're going to see the same thing happen with China.
And you said this week, and they're accusing the American car companies of dumping in China, which is laughable.
Yeah, they came up with this cockamamie idea that vehicles with engines over 2.5 liters coming from the United States are being subsidized by the American government. And that's one they're going to have to explain to me.
That's ludicrous.
That's just crazy.
But there's another side to what they're really doing.
Well, right. They're fuming about our tariffs on their tires and steel. And so that's why I'm saying they ruled against American cars. They haven't done anything about it. So I'm reading that to say this is a warning. They're keeping their powder dry. They're going to wait until something really ticks them off, and then they're going to pull that card out of their pocket again.
Yeah. Well, suffice to say, what the manufacturers are playing with fire with the Chinese government and the way they go about things. So they best be careful.
They should.
And, you know, message to GM, don't give any of that bold stuff away.
Right.
You know, deal with the, if you don't get the incentives, you don't get the incentives. You want to sell the bold over there, sell the bold over there, but don't give your stuff away.
I agree with you totally. Hey, this is probably a good time for us to go to our first break, and then we'll have Marjorie Krebsky come up right after that. And so we really want to give thanks to our sponsor, Bridgestone. Bridgestone is featuring its third generation of run-flat tires with groundbreaking new technology. Current run-flat tires can offer peace of mind for consumers, but the added mass and the stiffer sidewalls can compromise ride comfort and fuel efficiency. The new third generation Bridgestone run-flat tires reduce heat and improve performance and ride comfort. Whether you're a program manager in the industry or just looking for a set for your personal car, check it out at BridgestoneTire.com. And joining us right now is Marjorie Krebsky, who, as we're going to learn in a moment, has all kinds of auto show models and has been working auto shows for years and is the author of the book Sirens of Chrome. But first of all, Marjorie, got to thank you for coming on Autoline After Hours.
Thank you. I am so pleased to be here. And with the two of you, it couldn't be better.
Welcome.
So you've got this book, Sirens of Chrome, and it's probably the best starting point for this whole conversation. Tell us a bit about the book, what it's all about, and why you did it.
Well, I'll start with the last question, why I did it. I've been with the auto shows, automotive events, and automotive marking for over 25 years. And in the back of my mind, I've been collecting lots of stories. When I would go to the auto show and I would talk to people, somebody said, you ought to write a book because there's so many stories out there. And so one day I went to the NAC, the National Automotive Historical Collection, at the Skillman Library in Detroit. And they have such a wealth of photographs and pictures and memorabilia. So that was the beginning. I got a researcher, and she went to work finding pictures, and we must have gone through stacks and stacks of pictures. Also, there's never been a book written about the auto shows and the people who work it. Lots of books about cars and designers and the industry, but never one about this very unique marketing niche. And so it was a labor of love, because I love this end of the business. And it took a while to conceive exactly how it was going to be done. So I took a historical approach, because I learned that Sirens of Chrome, which really are the people who work the auto shows, it really began in 1900 with the very first documented auto show. And so that's why I wrote the book, to document this pretty great history.
Cool. Very cool.
It is really cool. What got you into the business in the first place?
Well, I used to work at J.L. Hudson Company. And I was
big old department store in downtown
right,
Detroit.
Right, exactly. And I was
Dayton Hudson,
Dayton
which
Hudson.
Became Target.
Became Marshall Field, yeah. Now is Macy's. But when I first moved to Detroit, I was manager of their fashion bureau. I was working with a lot of models. And one of them said, hey, I'm working the auto show. And so I went to the auto show in Detroit, which was a big phenomenon. And I went up to a model that I knew, and she was working for one of the luxury brands. And I went up to her. She was gorgeously dressed. She was on a turntable beside this fabulous concept car. And I looked at this car, and I love design. I said, tell me about this car. And she said to me, Marjorie, I'm not allowed to talk about the car. But when I got here, there was information in the glove compartment, and I have a break in 10 minutes. And we can gossip, and I'll tell you about the car. And so a little switch went off in my mind. What if these attractive people, men and women, who were standing beside the cars already, were really gearheads, were really smart about the cars, could talk to them? I thought maybe that would be interesting for people to come to the auto shows, because they've been reading things in magazines and newspapers, seeing things on TV. But what if they could really talk one-on-one with people who really knew about the car or the brand or the company they represented, and could talk to you about automotive history of this brand and what's underneath the hood? Because I realized cars can't talk. They're gorgeous, the way the sheet metal is molded, the colors, the technology. They have so many things under their hood and such great components when they were created. What if somebody could really talk to you about that? So that's the business that I'm in.
So you're the one that got all that changed?
I would like to think I was part of it. If it hadn't been me, it would have been another someone. Because it happened about the 80s, the beginning of the 80s, which was a time when Ms. Magazine came out. Gloria Steinem was talking about women and new roles. So if it hadn't been myself, somebody else would have certainly come up with that idea.
And that's where the term really started to change from model to
product specialist. Exactly.
But then it kind of veered the wrong direction, where everyone started wearing polo shirts and khakis. And then I had to raise my hand and said,
you are right.
Something's wrong here.
Right. It did. It went from one side to the other.
Yeah, it went one extreme to the other. And then I went to the Paris Auto Show a few years ago. And it was unbelievable, because nothing but gorgeous models by the cars, acting so bored, and they don't talk at all.
There is something about that Paris Auto Show.
Well, that's a whole nother planet.
It is a whole nother planet.
I mean, I distinctly remember this one gorgeous girl standing next to an Alfa Romeo 8C Competizione, and she, for 15 minutes, all she did was look at her split ends. And yet there were like 40 guys standing there. Like,
and you know,
what?
I have a picture in Sirens of Chrome that I took at the Paris Auto Show of two fabulous looking ladies in an Alfa Romeo, looking very French, very gorgeous, very Carla Bruni.
Yeah, and they don't talk, though. They don't usually.
No.
But in
America, they do, which makes our auto shows very, very unique. And you have to think, in Paris and in France, they have one auto show every 2 years. In the United States, we have about 93 auto shows. And a lot of people think it's just Detroit or New York or L.A.
It's
all over. It's like baseball, apple pie, and auto shows. It's very Americana.
I'm glad you agree that when they went to the polo shirts and khakis, it's the wrong turn.
The only place I really think polo shirts and khakis are really appropriate for product specialists when you have a very aggressive ride and drive on a terrain where that's a whole other deal.
Yeah.
But at the auto show, people go for the show.
Yeah.
They go for the show of the cars and how fabulous they are and all the new concepts and all the new stuff, the lighting, the exhibits, and they go for the people, the men and the women.
Yeah.
So it's a show. You know, you get your ticket, you get your hot dog, you get your Coke, and you bring your family, and you walk around the show, you collect all the free stuff that they're giving out, and it's a phenomenon.
Yeah.
So how have you seen it evolve? You know, you saw pure
question.
Bottles to product specialists to the khaki and polo shirt thing. And
yeah, they went the other way.
How do you see it evolving now?
And I think in 2008 it started to reinvent itself. I divided into like three different areas. First of all, awakening of the wheels from 1900 to 1945, when the war was happening, World War II and the factory shut down. Then 1945 to 1985, I call that the apex of excess, with cars going into over chrome and fins and just over designed, but it was fabulous. And then 1985 until present day, revving the world, because then everything went global. And so that's how I saw it. Then 2008 on will be another era. So I'm very interested in what the two of you are having to say about China and all the dynamics. So we'll have to come up with another slogan for that next era. For that next era.
Darn, I had hoped that you already had it named.
I didn't yet, but I'm working on it.
Tell us about your business and getting these product specialists or models. And
sure.
You said 93 shows in the United States. I had no idea they're there.
Most people don't, even people that are very steeped within automotive. They pepper the whole United States.
You have shows like in Indianapolis, Milwaukee, name
it. Phoenix, San Antonio, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, all over the place. But my company, Productions Plus, the Talent Shop, originated in 1981 from that idea that I told you when I went to the auto show the very first time. And it took a couple years for me to sell that idea to the marketing people that, hey, attractive people, and I feel anybody can be attractive, if they talk, you will get more return on investment from your exhibit. Well, most people did not believe that the first time around. But then it happened. So what my company does is we supply people to the automotive business. That's our core competency. And, of course, that's the auto show, auto events, ride and drives, managers, anything the automotive company needs. And it's done by people. That's what we do.
So this has got to be constant. I mean, you don't have any lulls.
There was a time where you did the auto show beginning in September, and the New York show was the end.
Not anymore.
Now there are all these terrific sponsorships in the summer, and then that's when the weather is great all around the country. People want to get into their automotive clubs. They want to go roading. It's all year long. And then usually August is a very busy time, talking about revving up, retraining people, because a lot of stuff happens. You know, every day, new technology, new stuff happens. So everyone goes back to school for about a week, and then you get in the new cars that will be at the auto show, because being in that vehicle and driving it's an important component of training. So every product specialist can say, well, I drove this. Then a consumer says, but I have this, which is part of the competition. And then they can say, well, when you drive this, if you take a test drive, notice these specific things. So they're pretty intelligent about competition and the brand they represent.
Sounds like a good business. I assume then that you work just in the United States, or how does this work on a global basis as well?
Well, it does expand globally. We certainly do auto shows in Canada. And I have been to the auto shows internationally, although we have not had people placed there.
So it might be an opportunity to expand.
Well, I go to those shows, and it's like the French show is very different, the Geneva show, the Tokyo show. They are not yet at the point where they realize that a return on investment means smart people really, really knowing the car and in depth. I have some product specialists who have been with brands almost since the inception, like Infiniti when it started 20-some or 30 years ago. I have a gentleman who has been on that team from the very beginning. And just think what he knows. He can talk about when they first came out, their marketing plan was they had advertising which didn't have pictures of the car, if you remember. The ocean and
rocks and trees.
Rocks and trees. It was very, very green at the time. And now he's like the information guru, where people who are now part of that company and brand come to him and ask, what happened then? What happened then? Because, so he's like a history factor. It's cool.
Well, look, we're going to have to come up to a break in a minute, but I'm dying to see what one of these models are like.
Okay.
Let's bring one on before we go on this break.
All right, let's bring on Chrome Girl.
How much I like Chrome? I really miss it.
Yeah.
Really.
Chrome is cool. Chrome is in.
Chrome is good.
Come on back on. Yeah.
Come on.
Tell us about this outfit and why did you pick this one to come out first?
This is an outfit we created for absolute visual appeal. And when you see it,
it's
stunning. You get, this is Chrome. And when we call our people, the nickname Sirens of Chrome, this personifies it. And this particular outfit is the one outfit I brought that has not stood beside one particular car. It represents all the cars that have Chrome and the invention of Chrome and the cool stories that go with it. You know, in 1950, there was the actress Dagmar, and now we have the Dagmar bumpers on the 1950 Cadillacs.
Dagmars.
Right,
yeah.
for obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons.
So when was this really? Is that still used today?
That is correct. Yes.
When was this outfit
this
created?
This outfit was created by our wardrobe manager, Sherry Barnett, who happens to be a designer. She's a designer from Parsons School of Design. And so we have automotive designers, and we have fashion designers working on clothes that coordinate. So she created this and put this together. Very simple, but it personifies the Sirens of Chrome.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. It really works. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break now, and then we'll come back and do more of this. But right now, we want to thank Hyundai for its sponsorship. The sixth generation of the Hyundai Sonata is taking the industry by storm, and no wonder. It offers a fluidic design theme that gives it a strikingly modern, coupe-like exterior design. And yet the interior provides the roominess of a full-size car as measured by the EPA. The Sonata also provides an eco-friendly interior with soy-based foam for the seats. Put it all together with Hyundai's strong reliability and value proposition, and you've got yourself a really compelling package. Check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com. Okay, Margie, we're going to continue our own little fashion show
All
here.
Right.
So let's bring the next one up.
All right, the next one's from 1960s. And what you're seeing are real vintage fashions. And all of the fashions now have appeared at the auto show. And this one was coordinated with Ford's Flatliner. And you see the color of this very rich, intense green. This was the same color as the Ford Flatliner from the 1960s. In the 1960s, the design of the Ford vehicle was really extreme. But so was this outfit, palazzo pants, evening pants, to wear pants in the 1960s for a cocktail party. And in chiffon with this really beautiful rhinestone belt. Was very glamorous, very romantic, and it attracted a great deal of attention.
I think we ought to bring this back.
Do you think? And look how the styling, if you look at classic cars and the styling of cars, and you equate it to the clothes that stood beside it, because these inspirations really came from the designing of the vehicles. And it could be classic today.
You know what I like about it is the sound of you just walking by.
You're revving up the engine, right?
Well, I mean, it's this rustling that you rarely hear in clothing anymore.
And it is nice. It's a nice component of it. Thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So it's interesting. You want to design the outfit to go with the car.
Oh, absolutely. So you get a team of designers together, and they begin to talk about the elements of the car, and they're interpreted in fashion. And all of the models that you're seeing are gearheads. All of them have worked the auto show or automotive events. So they're not just models that we decided we would bring on. These are people that you could meet at the auto shows and have a one-on-one conversation with about torque, 0 to 60 and how many seconds, or the new technology.
The best of both worlds. It's pretty
Indeed.
Good.
Indeed. Fashion and cars.
Yeah.
You can't beat it.
No,
you can't
you
beat
really
it.
Can't.
Okay, let's bring the next one up.
Okay. Now, this dress went with, of course, the 1960s. It's flower power. But the car that it stood beside is one of the most famous cars in automotive history. The Rolls-Royce John Lennon flower power car. And although that was never shown at an auto show, it certainly is an iconic car that represents an era. And Rolls-Royce is just the car with the spirit of ecstasy, hood ornament and everything. And so you can tell from the 1960s, and that car was, the artistic component was done by Peter Max, another famous artist from the 1960s. So you can see the flowers repeated here. Whenever I bring this dress out, everyone loves this because it reminds us of the 60s, that music. And when the car was here in Dearborn at the Henry Ford a couple years ago.
Oh, I missed that. I didn't know that it was.
Yeah, it was here a couple years ago. And I went to see it, and there were many people around it who all had stories about the music, John Lennon, and here's the dress that stood beside it.
That's really cool because that's a very famous car. I mean, I've seen zillions of pictures of the car over the years.
And almost everybody knows it. Even if you're not a car person, they know that John Lennon Rolls-Royce flower power car.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Daydream believer there.
So you've got all these outfits, what, on display?
I collected them over, I've collected them over the years. It's like at the end of each season, I would ask manufacturers if they wanted them back. Most of them didn't have a place to store them, so I always offered to store them. And after a while, I would say, do you want them? No, we don't need them. So I've collected 40 or 50 years of auto show fashions, and I've had product specialists who have been in the business who have given me their wardrobe. So it's
going to be one of the most unique collections in the world.
Absolutely. And I'm creating a documentary about Sirens of Chrome. And, of course, when we do the documentary, we'll have a fashion show.
Television documentary you're talking about.
Yes, indeed.
When will that be ready?
That'll be ready in about a year and a half. And right now, there is an exhibit that the National Automotive Historical Collection put together called Sirens of Chrome from all the pictures that we collected. And you have some of them right here.
We do. In fact, we've got a really weird one that I've got to ask you about because it's a woman wearing an outfit that looks like a skeleton.
Yes,
it looks freaky.
This on safe brakes, and that is from 1939, Chicago Auto Show. And think about, like, 1939, the technology was not as savvy as we had now. So safety, getting your brakes checked, just having basic good brakes was a big thing. So from their auto show, instead of a glamour gown or a evening gown with a push-up bra and two sets of eyelashes, this lovely young woman got to wear a skeleton outfit, and it attracted a lot of attention. Like, why is that woman wearing a skeleton outfit?
It looks hideous.
And, yeah, it does. And she's standing beside the a brake, so people could really see what that was. I like that picture because it really shows, even in 1939, people were curious.
Yeah,
yeah, it was she had to explain what that break was.
So what else do we have?
Yeah, let's bring the next outfit up.
Oh,
here.
Yes.
Music, please. Now, this is very elegant.
This is very, very elegant. Again, 1960s, and the music is very appropriate to the dress because in that era, Lincoln Mercury designed the Alvis Lincoln 5 limousine, which is a very unique car, and this was the dress that stood beside it. And we had this dress at the Edsel and Eleanor Ford House. They had the Sirens of Chrome exhibit last year. And for Father's Day, I was there and I was docent at the exhibit. And one of the designers from Lincoln Mercury was there. And it was a woman. And she said to me, I remember that dress. I remember we talked about it. I remember there was a lot of discussion about this dress. Well, you can
describe it a little bit for anybody who's just listening on a podcast so they can visualize it a bit.
It is a very light toast color, a two-piece evening ensemble.
Almost a gold in some of the reflection here.
Right, and under the lights it looks beautiful. It has a three-quarter length evening coat with mink cuffs, and the top of the dress is encrusted with all kinds of jewels and a rosette in the middle. So it's very classic. It could be worn today. You could wear this to what I always call the Detroit prom, which is the Detroit Auto Show black tie event. And you would fit right. You would fit right in. It's as beautifully designed as a Lincoln.
Well, given what
Lincoln
most women wear at Starbucks these days, I'd rather see that at Starbucks.
Yes, it is beautiful. And I was so thrilled that woman who had worked for Lincoln.
Yeah, I remember now.
Remembered it. And she almost gasped because she had remembered it. And she said, I remember seeing that at the auto show. And here is the dress again. So that was really very interesting to me. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks much.
So are we going to bring the models back at the end and introduce who they are? And
we should do that. Let's make sure we do that.
Who they are. And
because they all work the auto show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. How long they've been doing it. And
yeah, let's do that.
I think our
But, you know, you were mentioning these pictures up there. The one in the middle is a very famous poster.
Which dates from 1907.
1907, right. It says 1908 on there, but there were two posters done like this for the New York Auto Show in Madison Square Garden. And the original hangs at the National Automotive Historic Collection at the Skillman Library. It's right on the wall, and I knew it had to be included in the book because it's so historical, and it's really a beautiful piece of art. Also, the artist who did this, and I forget his first name, but his last name is Lyndon Decker, he also did paintings and posters and artwork for other things like toothpaste or soap. In those days, there were not automotive experts in photography or art. Since from that day on, we have people that certainly are experts.
And another picture you've got here is a man, Cary Grant.
Yeah, he's my ultimate Siren of Chrome. I'll tell you, he could wear that Siren of Chrome outfit anytime for me. That picture's very interesting in the Isetta. That was, of course, taken in Europe, BMW. And he had just finished making the movie with Grace Kelly and Alfred Hitchcock, To Catch a Thief. And he wanted to stay in Europe a little longer. So he got this gig with BMW, and he did some posing with the Isetta, and it kept him in Europe a while longer after the movie. And it is a pretty great picture. Every time I see an Isetta at a car show, like during the summer, I always think of it, and I usually ask the owner, do you remember the picture, or have you seen the picture of Cary Grant? And everyone remembers it. It's a very iconic picture.
And so you've included this picture because?
Because movie stars have become Sirens of Chrome. The first one was really Sonia Henie in the 1938 Four Chord. And Sonia Henie was an athletic star. She was a Norwegian figure skating champion, and the world knew her, so she began that. And then through the years, James Cagney, Joan Blondell, Marlena Dietrich have also been Sirens of Chrome, not to mention the famous
Loretta Young,
Dinah Shore, the most famous marketing genius of all, was the person who created the Dinah Shore Chevy show. And at the end, she sang that fabulous,
See
the USA in your Chevrolet. I can remember that as a child, hearing that. And we would all sing along, and all America caught this song. And Dinah Shore appeared at a lot of auto shows with her husband, George Montgomery, and they were just mobbed. They were the ultimate Sirens of Chrome. And she knew a lot about automobiles. She could talk about automobiles.
So do you see a lot of men coming into this part of the business, or is it?
Oh, yes, men and women, because we have people on our product specialist staff that are ex-designers, automotive designers, or salespeople, or who have been in the industry and just happen to know a lot about cars. And then conversely, we have people who come into it who are maybe college graduates of theater or communication degrees, and they come into it because it's a fascinating business.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you have to have when you're a product specialist is you have to have great communication skills. You have to be able to talk to people in a very real way and give out information.
And you have to listen to really bad lines from really nasty guys.
Like, do you come with a car?
How much is that option?
Well, and people want to know. So you talk to the public, but most of them really come because they really want to know about the cars, and they're information hungry.
So what's next?
Yeah, so what's next is we're going to the 1980s. And during that time, it was Cher, it was hot music, it was really the age of excess. And Bob Mackie was one of the top designers at that time. So he did a collection for Pontiac. So ladies, if you want to come in.
Let's bring them on with the music.
This is the Pontiac collection.
Because, see, I remember that because I worked at Pontiac's ad agency up there.
So you would remember it.
Damn. Still looks good.
It still looks good. And I like to call these the flame dresses.
Yes.
And they went with the Pontiac Firebird.
Describe them for those who are only hearing
this. Yes. These are, we have three different versions of flame dresses. Too long, and they are silk dresses and all encrusted with bugle beads, which have been hand-sewn. And at the top, two of them have a flame motif done in gold and silver. And one is a halter dress done in cross-hatching bugle beads with incredibly ornate designs. They are showpieces. Cher would have worn any of these, I think, in the 1980s.
Who was the main model, Natalie somebody, back for Pontiac?
Oh.
Remember her?
I do, and maybe I'll remember in a minute, but I do remember.
In fact,
it was a great age. And the gentleman at Pontiac,
Jim Graham,
that's exactly right. And I worked a lot with Al Fisher, who was on the floor.
Natalie looked a lot like the young lady in the middle.
Yes.
So, yes. By the way, are we going to...
Let's meet who you all are.
So we have here Maserati, Chrysler, and Nissan represented as product specialists. And we could bring out people that have worked the whole gambit. First of all, Channing, would you like to come down the runway and you can show your dress? Channing has worked for Maserati and Chrysler on the auto show circuit. And she's wearing the halter dress, which is long and very glamorous. And Renee is wearing the short version of the flame dress, which has a very dramatic and very sexy back.
Schwing.
And Carolyn, who is a Nissan product special and has been since 2007, is wearing the long version of that flame dress with the cutout back. And once you see these, you don't forget them. They're
Once you see those, there isn't a Nissan on the planet that you're going to remember.
And I do believe that someday these will be in the Smithsonian. I mean, they are that important. They were there during the times when Pontiac, I can remember them in Detroit. You walked right in the main entrance, and they were right there.
And that was where all the action was, always, every
year.
And
they stole the show. And then these ladies or their representatives at that time would get on the microphone and talk about the cars, and it was showtime.
Yes.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you very much, ladies.
That was terrific.
Well, John, we might as well end AutoLine After Hours right now.
That's right.
Because I don't think we're going to top the show.
We're not going to top it. But actually, what we should do is take one more commercial break. Right. Let's get to some of the questions from our viewers. Stick around, Marguerite.
Okay.
But we want to thank our sponsor, Chevrolet.
Not only does the Chevrolet Cruze offer a ton of features, it features some of the best safety and maintenance in the business. The Cruze comes with rear park assist, which beeps if you're about to back into something. It has rollover mitigation, which means the car senses if it might roll over, and applies the brakes to the outside front tire to bring the car back under control. And it has OnStar vehicle diagnostics, which sends you emails about the latest status of your car. And you can learn a lot more about it at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
So, we've got quite a few questions here. Goggles Pisano wants to know, okay, serious question now for Marguerite. Have you ever met Linda Vaughn?
No, I have not. No,
I have met her, and she's actually a terrific person.
I have not met her, but I would look forward to it.
She just had a heart procedure, but she's doing well.
Hmm. Okay.
007 Mitch W. says, for Peter, as a native-born GMer, did your father give you any insight into the effect of the ladies at the car shows?
No.
Short and sweet.
He never did, no.
Yeah, he also goes on to say, yikes, how stupid do these beautiful women make guys at the show?
Well,
they turn stupid.
Yeah, guys turn stupid.
Well, so, they can have a nice conversation. A lot of them come in, they really want to know about it, and they're kind of impressed that these women know a lot about vehicles.
We've got a number of phone calls here. Ben, let's bring in the first one.
Hey, John, Rick from San Diego. You know, the China thing, I believe Kramer on CNBC calls that communist capitalism. And speaking of the China market, on the GM thing, I think some of the profits might be due to the fact that their biggest selling vehicle is, I think, the Wuling Sunshine, which is a small rear-wheel drive minivan. Any comments, thanks?
Well, the Chinese government has suggested to the manufacturers that they do an all-Chinese brand, which GM has just done.
Right. But he raises a good point. One of the reasons GM makes twice as much profit here is
they make a bunch of little pea shooters.
Yeah, little inexpensive vehicles, and you can't make much profit on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's absolutely the case. That what I was told about the China telling foreign automakers they have to build their own brands in China is China still feels it hasn't gotten enough intellectual property, and it doesn't have any really good chief engineers. A lot of engineers, not any good chief engineers. So by forcing foreign automakers to develop cars from scratch in China, not bring a platform over and modify it, they feel this is the way they're going to start to train chief engineers fast. So that's what I've been told is the reason behind it. Hey, we've got some more phone calls. Ben, let's go to the next.
Good evening, people. This is Youngblood, Cleveland, Ohio. You knew this was coming. I just got back from my Napa store, and I bought all the chrome polish that was on the shelf. Can you put Chrome Girl back on? Later, guys. Bye.
Bye, Youngblood. Yeah.
We're with you on that one. And let's bring in another phone call here, Ben.
Hey, guys. It's Jonathan out in Old
Town. All right, Jonathan.
I just wanted to say, great show. This has to be one of my favorites, and I just wanted to call in with the utmost respect, say, I love Chrome. Anyways, have a nice evening, and thank you for a wonderful show, and I will look forward to buying the book. It sounds fascinating, and I always enjoy talking to all the product specialists at the shows that I go to. I've been going to the shows since 1963. It's a wonderful part of life, and I share that with my son, and the product specialists are always very nice. Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
That's great.
One of
That's
my most lovely. Memorable car shows is when they introduced the Pacer in the Detroit Auto Show.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I was right. That was...
We all have our, you know, favorite auto show moments.
That wasn't a favorite. It was just...
It was...
A memorable one.
Memorable.
What's your favorite auto show moment, then?
Oh, I think when Celine Dion came, there was such excitement
that
evening.
It was electric.
Evening. It was
electric.
I wasn't
a fan of hers, but I was there that night, and it was electric.
And I wasn't a big fan of hers either. I mean, certainly I respect her as an entertainer, but there was magic in the air. And I remember sitting and thinking, Detroit created magic tonight. Really, yeah. That would be the headline.
In fact, you know, I've said all along, we haven't pushed the auto shows far enough. We should bring in more entertainment, and that kind of entertainment should actually be there on public days, too.
Yes, it should. And remember when they did Cirque du Soleil? Yeah. It was just mesmerizing.
Right. It was.
And when the Buick Enclave, I remember when they brought that out, and they had dancers who were around it with lots of chiffon fabric. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Okay, here's another industry question. Guy is saying, this is from Jeff W. When does an automaker record a sale? When the dealer takes possession or when the final customer takes possession? Is there an industry standard that they follow? I can answer that. Car companies record a sale as soon as it rolls off the assembly line.
Yep.
I mean, once it's out of the plant, that's booked as a sale.
That's it at the dealer.
Right. Then it's the dealer's problem.
Yeah.
And now that's what they do for financial reasons. Now, they don't count sales until the car is actually sold.
Over the curb.
Yep, that's right. So, and then Mike DeWant says, what about fleet sales? When are those recorded?
Whenever the manufacturers need to pump up their...
Hey, we're about 5,000 units short of hitting our bonus, you know. Let's make some more. And they do that, too. They have done that. They'll make stuff just to book them as profits. Rick in Laguna Niguel, California says, when do we expect to see stop-start engine technology on non-hybrid cars? I would have expected the 2012 Focus and Cruise to provide this feature. It's just around the corner. One of the reasons we haven't seen it yet is the automakers are literally keeping their powder dry. Fuel economy standards keep going up. So why throw all the stuff in the market right yet?
You know, they have to.
Some of it they're going to hold back. You know, they're not going to do it exactly right away. But I think before the decade is out, I want to say almost 100% of all vehicles will have that technology.
So far, the most impressive stop-start technology I've driven is the Porsche Panamera, the V6.
Dave says, a friend living in China told me the story going the rounds is that Shanghai Automotive Industry Corporation plans on buying a controlling interest in General Motors. Have you heard anything?
I've heard that. Whatever, you know.
Well, actually, GM, of course, has a minority stake in SAIC, and SAIC made no bones about it. They'd like to buy GM stock, and GM says it has no problem about that. And then somehow this hit the internet, and now they're buying General Motors. Not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. Yeah, great. Let's see, what else do we have here? This is a little bit long. This is from Al Jajzak from Lake Orion. He says, "Hi, Marjorie. Back in the late 90s, I was asked to be a part of GM's exhibit called Vision 2000 Theater. It was a great experience. I got to work with Mark Avery, a past Detroit radio and TV personality. Mark was our coach, taught us how to present ourselves in public. Mark's wife, Jackie, ran a modeling agency that supplied fashion shows on local Detroit TV." Goes on to say, shared a room in Cobo Hall for resting, eating, and meeting. Jackie would bring in, wow, this goes on for a while here. Anyway, long story short, he says, "I'm looking forward to reading your book. I'm sure there's some good memories in there."
There are good memories. And you know, you mentioned what are some of the highlights and whatever. There have been a lot of really fine people that have worked the auto show, and it really becomes a family. What good memories, you know. I remember Mark Avery. I remember Jackie, who worked there. I remember Phyllis Popa, who worked there, and my former partner Harriet Fuller. I mean, there are just a lot of wonderful Detroit people who helped create a national presence for everyone.
Good. Hey, we promised her. Oh, we got one more phone call in. Let's bring that one in before we get to the book.
Why did Marjorie skip the 70s?
Well, I just brought dresses from the 60s, and if we had had more time, I would have. There are certainly some very interesting fashions, but I chose color, the bright color, the flower power, and one elegant thing, and, of course, the Bob Mackey dresses. So I'm sorry, sir. Next time, 70s are on deck.
Good. Hey, we promised that we'd give away one of your books.
And I'll be glad to sign it, too.
Oh, even better still. So we're going to find out, because we did this sort of contest thing on Facebook and Twitter.
Sure.
And the winner is Christian Chan. And he entered on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Out of Line Detroit. And if you didn't win, there will be another chance. Pay attention to our Facebook and Twitter pages to learn how to enter, and we'll announce the winner. I will change that. We will announce the winners on next week's show, because Margie actually brought a number of extra copies of the book, so we'll give away, I don't know, I think we got four or five of them.
That's
to give
right.
away.
That's right. It's my pleasure. Automotive fans, yes, absolutely. My people.
Well, Marjorie, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been fantastic.
Thank you.
This is you know, a whole different way of doing the show for us, and I really like what we've done here tonight.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Remember, everybody, you can catch us at facebook.com/Out of Line Detroit. If you want to get into winning one of these books, that's where you go. Follow us at twitter.com/Out of Line. Follow Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com or twitter.com/autoextremist. Margie, you got a website or anything you want to drive
sure.
people through?
Sure. Productionsplus.com.
Great. Can they get the book there?
Or they can go to sirensofchrome.com, and the book you can get at amazon.com.
Perfect. That's great. Hey, don't forget about Roundabout. Ben, are you guys doing Roundabout tomorrow night?
Yes.
Okay. Don't forget about Roundabout either. And so I guess we'll hang it up here. But
so are all these ladies going to continue doing what they do?
Or? I believe so. And you just saw three tonight of about 250 to 300 of our team that travel all over the United States to these 93 auto shows. And that's what they do. That's the main thing that they do.
That's great.
It is. It's a whole subculture of, I guess you could call it, entertainers, automotive enthusiasts, and they're fun to talk to.
And everybody should go to the Paris Auto Show once.
Oh, yes, they should, Peter. I would agree with that. I'll see you there in a year and a half.
Well, real good, Peter. See you back here next week, man.
Great show, man.
Great show. Thank all of you for having tuned in.
Visit our website, outoflinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutoLineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.